Another great intro selection.
Thank you. I try. This one I couldn't even do Name That Tune on. It's kind of obvious.
It shows, you know.
But it's one of those instrumentals when you're not quite sure if it's actually going to be an instrumental or not.
You never know.
Because the words are part of the background, so yeah. It's kind of nice.
You never know when you get the random DJ throwing up. Just you know, random shout outs and cursing everyone.
We try to keep a PG on this podcast. It is the long two. We took Memorial Day off.
We did.
We took a little vacation, right?
We did. Honey, dude, this was too long.
I think we're gearing up for the finals. So a little programming note. We're going to do this one. Tonight is Thursday, May 28th, right? Is that correct? Yeah. So when you get to this from iTunes or Nylon Calculus or from the HP channel on SoundCloud or however else you manage to get to this, it'll probably be Friday. Our plan is we'll have another podcast probably on Wednesday night, the night before the finals start, since we have an NBA playoffs vacation at this point. So we're going to roll out two for one. And because of that, I think we made an agreement that we're not going to talk about the finals tonight.
Nope, no finals talk.
Why bother?
Is going to shock everybody, I'm sure, because all today, that's all I heard was finals talk. And
which
most
is,
of it was,
we're going to go hipster and go the other way.
We're going to go gangster.
We're going to go the other way. There's plenty to talk about in the NBA right
plenty,
now.
Plenty.
Besides the finals. Right? So let's get into it. What do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the conference finals?
Yeah, let's go ahead and move right into the conference finals. Those just ended. They're fresh on everybody's mind. Let's get right into them. Who do you want to start with?
Let's start in the West.
You want to start in the West?
Yeah, let's start with the West.
Let me get your thoughts.
Okay.
Let's get your thoughts. Golden State, Houston. let me hear it.
It was, so, it was an interesting series. Houston's like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, got a Jekyll and Hyde thing going on, it seems like. I mean, some nights they're unbelievable, they can't miss. Other nights, they were horrible, they were horrendous. It seemed to be largely dictated by pace. I mean, their best nights when they were making shots, they were pushing the ball. Even on makes, I love that. When they're pulling fast breaks on makes, they're just playing at that kind of rapid pace. It was excellent. Dwight Howard generally shows up for the playoffs. I don't care about any dirty or not dirty hits or anything like that, but generally shows up and performs in the playoffs. So that was good.
He shot his free throws pretty well last night, actually.
Yeah, they did go hack a Howard a little bit at the end. Mm-hmm. But it was done in a different way. It wasn't as like blatant and obvious and painful as like the Clippers Rockets series where it was just back and forth
right.
The whole thing. So it was, I want to say it was like Hack a Howard in a tasteful way.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Well, they had some, I thought some of those, the Hack a Howards were well played by Steve Kerr. You know, he planned them during possessions. A lot of them were, you know, time management kind of thing. Like, okay, we're going to take away the, put Howard on the line, you know, save these extra 24 seconds. Maybe we can go 2-for-1 or, you know, 2-for, you know, 3 or 2-for-0. You know, so I thought it was interesting strategy. And even with him making it, and making a good amount of his free throws last night, still smart.
The thing with the hack strategy is I think it needs to be an element as part of a larger strategy or philosophy that you're applying to a given time period in the game. When it's the only thing, I think that's when it's failing and it's most
absolutely
painful to watch. But like you're describing, when it's used in conjunction with the timeout or other plays, or you're going to gear your offense to made three free throws or miss, whatever the case is, when it's only a component, I think it's more digestible for a fan and it's more functional for a team. So there's that.
Noticed. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, he seemed to time them when the Rockets were looking to match or maybe start going on a run, or Harden maybe looked like maybe he's turning around.
Yeah.
So it was nice. It was almost like using a timeout, you know, to slow it down, settle people down, you know, not let them get into a flow. I thought it was smart.
Yeah, and speaking of James Harden, which was what I was about to talk about anyway, I don't even want to hear, I'm not going to even tolerate any of this choking, doesn't show for big game stuff. Because, yes, he had arguably one of the worst games of his career last night for game 5. The game before that, he had 45 points.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
he was unstoppable.
Exactly. And not to mention, the style of play that he has embodied this season hasn't been favorable to a lot of people to watch. It's been painful for some, whatever the case is, right? He unleashed kind of old school Harden and showed that he can play a variety of styles, and he's largely unstoppable with the ball. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just have to be layups, fouls, and threes. Absolutely. His mid-range game is nice. He can get to wherever he wants to get to most of the time. And I mean, he's an amazing player, and that was nice to see. So I don't want to hear any of this. He choked. He doesn't show up for big games. We can't define this man's career going forward based off of Game 5 and some performances when he was with the Thunder in the NBA Finals. That's completely unfair.
Now,
what I will also say is the injuries to Houston made this an unwinnable series for the most part, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that if Beverly and Monta Hunis were healthy, they would have won. But I think it would have went more games, I think. I would have loved to have seen Beverly on Curry, just to level that matchup a little bit more. It would have been very interesting. It would have been very interesting. The one other thing I will say, because we're less than 10 minutes in, but we're more than 5 minutes in, so I can talk about Josh Smith, right?
I was going to bring him up if you didn't.
So. Well, what do you have to say about Josh Smith then? Please, you first.
I thought he had some minutes where he looked phenomenal, and you're like, why? This guy is one of the superstars on the team. He had a lot more minutes of, what are you doing? Why on earth are you even on the court right now? Like, if I was the coach, I would pull him immediately. He took one three-pointer sticking out to me for some reason, but it was a one-on-three break. And not even a push break. I mean, it was a three-quarter kind of, and pulls up for a deep contested three, and it was during a point in the game in which Golden State was really pushing the ball and starting to pick it up. And you know, once they go on their runs, you need to stay with them, or the game is done. And I just thought, that's a time where you need to regroup, get it in, get Dwight Howard's rolling, slow it down, take away their shots, feed the beast, let him do his thing. Get Harden the ball. Get him going. Because those guys should know that they cannot win with James Harden not playing at a high level. If it took him 15 turnovers, what did he have, 13?
13.
If he had to get two more to all of a sudden wake up, well, you know what? I'd rather that, than Josh Smith taking a pull-up contested three.
Here's my thing with Josh Smith. Obviously, small sample sizes, whatever, for the postseason. But I've always been very intrigued by him because his skill set is so unique given his size, given his athletic ability. And, I mean, generally, phenomenal basketball player, I'd argue, right? Not necessarily a case of misuse but using him properly, and I stand by this, small doses is always the key with him. So in the postseason this year, going into the Warriors series, this didn't stay consistent throughout all the games. But what I had found was that there's this happy medium where if he played too much, so if he played more than like 28 minutes in a game, the Rockets lost. If he played less than 20 minutes in a game, the Rockets lost. So there's this window where you don't play him too much, you don't play him too little, you play him between like 20 to 26 minutes per game. And that was when they were winning all of their playoff games. Heading into the Warriors series. I loved it because it spoke to this moderation thing, what I've talked about many times before with him, right? What I also thought was interesting is then going into last night's game, and this held true last night as well. So when we talk about in-game plus minus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point differential when one player is in or whatever, right? What I had found is that when Josh Smith had a plus minus that was positive, so greater than zero, all postseason the Rockets were 6-1. So they only lost once whenever he had a positive plus minus. It held true last night. He had a negative plus minus, not surprisingly, given how the game went. So one of the keys, I thought, was limited usage, limited minutes, playing him in the starting lineup, because it seems counterintuitive, but by doing that, it lowers his usage automatically because you've got Harden and Howard and then him, whereas on a bench unit, he's going to be one of the leaders of scoring and shot-taking. So that would artificially inflate his usage. It seems wrong to talk so much about him because he's not the best player on that team, but I've always felt, ever since they acquired him, that that could be an absolute steal and a key for them to perform well and go further into the
playoffs. He's an absolute big part of that team, and I think for any team to win a championship, to get into the semifinals, quarterfinals, you have to have a whole team, and you have to have all those pieces. And one piece not playing their part, doing their thing, can lose the series for you. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. And when it as tight as these games are, and when you go down 3-1 and you're playing for your life, and you went down 3-0 before, so you had to put everything in. You can't. Everything has to be firing every time. I mean, Josh Smith is important. Ariza played a pretty good series. He didn't shoot overwhelmingly great from three, but I thought he played a great series. He played great defense. I mean, he's can't complain too much about him, but he seemed to use his head more. And that's where I think, you get Josh Smith, he just makes some dumb plays where you're just like, no. He's
frustrating.
That guy. Yeah, he is a frustrating player where, five plays before that, you're like, oh, this guy's amazing. And then all of a sudden, he has three plays in a row where you're like, what are you doing?
So it's like in-game moderation as well. It's not only limiting the minutes, but it's knowing when to have a hook on him or a short leash
absolutely.
On him. So it's like if you got four great plays in a row from him, if that fifth play is not, you're on borrowed time at that point. Mm-hmm. It's time to make a decision. It's time to put in Terrence Jones. It's time to go another route at that point.
Absolutely.
So, that's a very delicate, temperamental thing to work with, too, of, like, you're really in this gray area where you've got to micro-analyze in-game all these things that are going on. I don't envy that position. It's easy for me to sit here on this beanbag, which is very comfortable, by the way. You've done good things down here.
Hey.
It's easy for me to sit on this beanbag and go, well, when he plays more than 20 minutes and less than 27, the Rockets win. Like, yeah, but you've also got to deal with the pace and flow of the game and the matchups and everything else.
Absolutely.
So it's not that easy, but moderation is key with him. So where, how do you think the Rockets do next season then? So obviously they're out. So what do you think about their chances for next year?
I think Harden had the best season he's ever going to have last
season.
Really? I don't think.
You think he peaked?
I think that's James Harden at the top of his game right there.
Okay.
Can he do it again? I mean, that's hard. I mean, even, you go back to Jordan's best seasons. It takes a very rare player to be able to duplicate those kind of MVP running seasons. I mean, and he had an MVP type season.
Absolutely, runner-up.
Easily, he was an easy runner-up. Can he duplicate that? I don't know. I think he's going to be close to it. I'm hoping that this makes him hungrier. I think they definitely need a couple pieces, maybe. Little tweaks and turns. I think they're definitely going to be back in the playoffs. Two or three seed probably again. Maybe sliding down to a four. It depends on some other people. But they're going to be a good favorite to get into the playoffs again and do some work. If they're going to get into the finals, I mean, this is the West. This is hardcore.
Here's the interesting thing, though. So you figure, let's just say they don't lose any major pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so Beverly comes back from injury. They've got to re-sign him. I think he's an unrestricted free agent. So they got to make a big decision there.
Yep.
I think they got to keep him. Because when he runs the point or plays the point position on defense,
mm-hmm.
it's huge. Jason Terry had a phenomenal year for being about 37 years old. He's not done. I think he's made comments that he plans on coming back. When you bring him off the bench, if he's playing like this again, this resurgent Jason Terry, that bench is even better.
He's experienced. He's not afraid to take the shots in the finals. He's a smart player, too, which is exactly... I mean, that's what you want from somebody coming off the bench. And he's still got some speed, some mm-hmm. defense. He plays with intensity. He's a leader on the floor, which there's a lot of those guys on the Rockets are not vocal leaders
absolutely.
On the floor, where he is. He's a hype guy. He'll get the team going. So
you figure you bring back Terry, you re-sign Beverly, you limit Terry's role to a bench player, probably some clutch or some prime minutes in clutch time also. But you get Monta Hunis back from injury.
Mm-hmm.
That's a solid core. They also have cap space.
They do.
They can actually still make a little bit of a splash, which would be very interesting because they've got Daryl Morey, the evil genius behind everything that is analytics. I wouldn't rule out, obviously I don't have sources. I wish I did. I want a source, but that's a whole other conversation. One of these days, I want to be a handler for a source. But anyway, I digress. I'd be curious to see if they try to make a move to get a four or a three or something and package something up or mess with their cap space. I mean, you can't rule anything out when it comes to them, ultimately.
You never know. I mean, that could be an interesting landing spot for somebody like Kevin Love.
Yeah. that gets dicey and crazy because you've got signing trades and all that kind of stuff. But that's the thing with Amori especially, is you never quite know what they're capable of doing. I think their future looks promising at this point. Dwight Howard has to maintain his health, obviously.
Yeah.
If he stays healthy, they bring back Beverly, they keep that core together, I don't see any reason why they fall off, I think is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And if chemistry and health were their biggest issues this season, another year together should only help that. I think the future looks promising for them. And as competitive as the West is, they're part of the reason why it'll be so competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're right at the top again. Like you said, like one of the top four teams.
Yep, they're in there. They're in that two. I don't think they're going to have enough to get into grab that one seed just because it's so so heavy, you know, heavy-handed over there. But yeah, 2-4. They're the top four teams in the West, easy next year. They're smart with the way they do their offseason. I think they're going to pick up some. They know what they need. They're going to go get it. They have enough to go get it. I think they'll draft somebody nice. You know, I'd say that they're probably going to look maybe at a point guard in the draft. And I think they'll get somebody who can give them, you know, that can contribute immediately.
It's promising.
It is.
All right, so then let's shift gears a little. Let's go to the East and talk about the team that didn't advance. The Atlanta Hawks. How do you feel about the Atlanta Hawks at this point? How do you feel about that series that just happened?
Four-game annihilation. That looked like a 1-8. I mean, Atlanta did not play well at all. They did not shoot well. Now, they got wrecked with injuries during that series. But even they were full strength for the first couple games, and they had nothing going. Their offense had fallen off. I really thought Washington had a good chance to beat them. I mean, you could see once Kyle Korver is eliminated from really being an effective piece of that offense, there's not a whole lot there. Teague is great, but he's not going to win. He's not going to throw the game on his back and win it. Now, I mean, I take that back, because Jeff Teague won at least one of the games against the Wizards. I mean, he threw him on there, and he made some dagger shots. Horford is great, but he was playing at such a high level against Washington. He had to take a step down, and LeBron is a different animal, and the Cleveland in general.
I like Jeff Teague, so I don't want this to get taken the wrong way. I like him as a player. I don't know him as a person, but I'm sure I wouldn't really have any problem with him. But it's not that I question the All-Star selection, because he had an All-Star caliber first half of the season. I don't necessarily think that he's one of the top point guards. I'd argue he's slightly above average. But, I mean, so we can't expect superstar level production from him, because that's just not him at this point, right? Yeah. I like Paul Millsap a lot. They got to figure out what to do with Paul Millsap in the offseason.
They do too.
But back to the playoffs, this team was remarkably different than the regular season version of them, right?
Entirely.
I don't know if that's a function of this age-old argument of you need a star player, because what happens in crunch time? Who takes the final shot? All that narrative that we heard leading into the playoffs of, oh, systems don't work, star players do.
They didn't get into any crunch time.
And that's exactly what I was about to say, is I can't buy into that, because they had problems with the Nets, they had problems with the Wizards, and they absolutely had problems with the Cavs. But it wasn't like it was in the fourth quarter where they needed a player to take a shot.
It was the first quarter.
The Nets, they had difficulty. I mean, we knew going into the playoffs they were not strong rebounding. That was one of their weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were playing against big teams, that was going to be a problem. All three teams they played against were significantly larger than them, where they could, I mean, Tristan Thompson and Mozgov could feast on the glass this past series, right? Nene and Gortat, the same in the series.
I'll give you Gortat. Nene can...
He's big. I'm just saying he's big. Obviously, he wasn't big on that one last possession. They lost the game, but regardless. And then the Nets are big, too, with Lopez. He's not known for his rebounding, but he was able to score relatively at will down there. So they've got to figure out what they do with Millsap, though, in the offseason. He's a free agent. He sounds like he's kind of like a heart and soul element of the team, like he's a crucial piece. think he's a great player. I think he's one of the I think he's one of the top tier power forwards of the league. So I think you want to keep that together. The backup point guard position. So one of the things I noticed in the playoffs, especially, I watched a fair amount of the Hawks in the regular season. Not a ton, but
they're a good team to watch.
Absolutely, they were fun to watch.
Great basketball.
In the postseason, there was a less tendency to do a lot of the pace and space that they did in the regular season, and it was a lot of Schroeder one-on-one.
It was.
Dennis Schroeder. I'm looking at his stats right now, and they don't go significantly up, but they did increase, specifically like his usage and things like that. I found it odd that when you've got weapons like this, you've got Korver, you've got Millsap, you've got Horford, and he's on the court with them, and he's trying to beat his guy off the dribble and go one-on-one and then take the shot. Like, it struck me as odd. It struck me as really odd.
I found it odd, too, and I don't know if you've been able to break this down, but to me, it looked like he had... Schroeder came out and had a huge game against the Wizards, and it was part of that big... I want to say it was a Wizards game that Pierce hit the game winner, but they had been up by like 25, and Schroeder was on that, you know, that bench team that made that huge comeback. Mm-hmm. It seemed like from that game on, we saw it was either, you know, he was in a ton, and when he was in, he was isolating, he was doing his thing. I mean, it looked like you're like, okay, here's our other superstar coming off the bench. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well,
he's obviously talented, but I wonder if it's a youth thing where they've got to rein that in a little bit to play within the system a little bit more. But because I don't know, reasons abound. So they've got Millsap to consider. They've got Damari Carroll to consider also, because he earned himself a pretty big payday coming
Absolutely.
Up too. I assume they want to keep all that together. Going back to regular season versus postseason, obviously this wasn't the actual same team because they had the injuries to deal with. I think Millsap and Horford were injured going into the playoffs.
Yeah, they were.
So there was that. Obviously, Korver got injured, and then the Cephalosha incident mm-hmm. as well. So that drastically changed things.
Yeah.
They've got, for like a stretch four, they play Perišić like he is a stretch four, but he doesn't really shoot like one. His three-point percentages are actually pretty weak. Mike Muscala, so he's interesting to me because when he came out, when he entered the draft, he looked like a traditional big man.
Mm-hmm.
He was hitting key three-pointers against the Wizards in the postseason. That might be the stretch big that they're looking for off the bench.
I'd be
curious to see if that becomes a realistic thing. The fact that he developed a three-point shot, I think, is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think
I was intrigued by that.
They really need to add another shooter. You saw taking Korver away by basically just coming off high on every screen, keeping the rotation, ensuring he doesn't get into any kind of shooting groove, it really hurt their offense. They did not look put together at all. I'd say from the Wizards series on without Korver. Now, I mean, they won against the Wizards. We keep saying that, but we knew that Atlanta team had Wall been healthy, the Wizards would have won that series. That Atlanta team did not look like they were ready to take on, you know, the number two team coming out. You know, they did not look like they were ready to face Cleveland. They didn't look like they would have gotten past Chicago either. You take Korver out of that offense, it just doesn't move as well. It doesn't shoot as, you know, it's just a flow thing. You know, they played off a lot of emotion when he hit those threes. You know, it would help them on the defensive end and everything else. They need to add another shooter.
Seemingly. So, bold prediction time. Do the Hawks finish as the top seed in the East next year?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think they're going to lose one of their key guys.
You think they will?
Yeah, I think they will. At least one. It's going to be hard to bring everybody back and add pieces. But, like, they have some young guys. Coming off the bench, I think they're going to be strong, but I don't think they're going to grab that top seed. I think I have them a little bit lower than, you know, say Houston in the West. I'd say Atlanta's going to come around that three seed, I think.
I would think they're going to be a team that has home court advantage in the playoffs next season, in the first round.
A three or a four, or seemingly. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd say
maybe as high as a two. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, you never know. I mean, they could get everybody back, be healthy, and make some noise again. I think everything was clicking for them this season, and they went to they had some ups and downs.
I mean, they may have peaked too early. It seemed like they peaked in January with that streak. It was very similar to the Pacers last season, who were so dominant for the first half of the regular season, peaked way too early.
Absolutely.
They absolutely collapsed and stumbled their way into the conference finals last year.
I mean, they got swept, which you should never get swept, in conference finals. But Cleveland also shot three-pointers, probably 20% better than they have all season in this series.
Yeah, we'll have to get into this next week, but how sustainable that is going forward
is questionable at best. You know, we had chatted earlier about, you know, the Orlando Magic when they made that run. How many years ago? 6 years ago?
I think it was 2009. It was 2009 to the finals.
When they were just shooting unreal percentage from three-point land. And it was well above. It wasn't Golden State, which has been at this level consistent from game one to, game four, or game five, clinching the conference finals. They've sustained that 3-point shooting. This was rabbit in the hat kind of thing. So, with that combined with injuries, it was a recipe for disaster with Atlanta. I still, they're deciding what to do with the point guard spots in which direction. I don't know if it's which direction they want to go, because they obviously can't play them both.
Yeah, I mean, the styles didn't seem to mesh well when they're both on the court.
So. I think Schroeder looks for a shot way too much. He's able to get to the rack. He slightly better shooter. I mean, he does look like a Rondo-type player.
Yeah, I think that.
Slightly better shooter. He doesn't pass as well, not nearly
as
well.
But ball dominant is the key.
Yeah.
I mean, so that changes an offense completely when you've got a ball dominant point guard.
Cephalosha, had he been in there, I think that could have changed a lot.
Yeah, I don't want to overplay his role. Because he's not necessarily a very good shooter.
No, but defensively, he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would have definitely added a piece. And it was another body, a significant body, to put on
he's
LeBron.
He's always been pretty decent on LeBron.
Absolutely. And he's just a very good defender in general. Yeah. And he's just a good
he's
team
gritty,
chemistry.
He's a tough guy. He's
He generally makes a lineup better.
Yeah.
Like, just his presence.
Yeah.
So.
He's one of those guys.
So, all right. So, that takes care of the Hawks and the Rockets. You want to talk about coaches?
Let's talk about coaches.
So, there are vacancies right now in... Let me scroll through this. There are vacancies in Denver, technically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Denver, New Orleans, and Orlando, and as of today, Chicago, right? So, there's four vacancies. So, give me some takes. Give me some predictions. Who do you like going where? Let's start with New Orleans. Who, if you were picking a coach for the New Orleans Pelicans and the phenomenal talent that is Anthony Davis, who is your coach?
Who is my coach for the Pelicans? Thibodeau, I think, would be a good coach to bring over there. I think I like his style. I think him matching up with Davis, it would be a good thing. I don't think there's anything bad. I think he's going to teach Davis how to just become nothing but better on the, especially on the defensive end. I like it. I think they have the manpower to run that offense. I know it's a very what he runs maybe seven guys, and it's primary that starting five. I mean, he's an old school kind of bench players come in for a little bit, and then we're done. That's it. You're on? Okay, you're off. Here, he had a breather. So I think he'd be a good fit. What are you thinking?
Alvin Gentry.
Wow.
I've listened to enough of Amin El-Hassan at this point from ESPN, and listening to him cape for Alvin Gentry, that I love the idea of Gentry in New Orleans.
Yeah?
I think it is a perfect fit. Perfect. I would love to see what he could do with Anthony Davis. I think we've forgotten that Gentry, when he was head coach of the Suns, I think they had one of the four best offenses ever in league history. So the man is a genius offensively. We see the end result of that right now in Golden State.
Yeah.
So He's learned and adapted. He's around a great defensive scheme right now, so they'll be able to. He'll be able to take some of those principles with him. Obviously, I would love to see what he could do with that lineup. I think they could do a lot of good things. You've got Ryan Anderson, obviously Anthony Davis. You've got Holiday, Evan. There's a lot of firepower there. Like, yeah, they could do some great things. I think Gentry is a good fit. It's not that I don't like Thibodeau. It's that I think just I just like the fit of Gentry. All right, so
I like it.
We disagree about New Orleans. That's fine. Whatever the case is. Which one is next? Let's talk about the Magic.
All right.
Who's going to the Magic? Who would you pick to coach? Actually, no. Let's skip real quick ahead to the Bulls. Are we in agreement that this is basically Fred Hoiberg's job to lose at this point, it sounds like?
Yeah, I think it is.
If you read any smattering of news articles at this point, all indications point to Fred Hoiberg's the guy for that job, right? He's got an ongoing relationship with the Bulls. He's been in the league as an executive. I think he was a GM or an assistant GM with the Timberwolves at one point. He obviously played for the Bulls. He has a relationship with Gar Foreman, John Paxson, all those guys. Do we even need to talk about the Bulls any further?
No.
All right, cool. So the Magic. Who's coaching the Magic next year?
Now, this is a team that's got a good young core.
A confusing young core. They got pieces?
They got some pieces.
But it's like they have five corner pieces to their puzzle.
That's true.
Or they have two. Yeah. I don't know which one it is, but they don't have four. They can't make a rectangle out of the puzzle that they're building.
You know?
Yet.
I wouldn't know. I mean, I wouldn't know where to start for them. You know, so, honestly.
The rumor is Scott Skiles.
Yeah, I heard Scott Skiles.
Former Magic player. So Skiles is fascinating because he's often been that intermediary coach where if your team is at rock bottom, he comes in and coaches. He coaches for like maybe three seasons, and by the end of that, they're normally in a better place. They're normally contending for a 7 or 8 seed making the playoffs, right? Then he gets fired. Then they regress and get a little worse, and then they get a lot better. Tends to be the trend, so it seems. I don't know if that's a fair assessment of him. He obviously has a reputation of instilling a pretty hard-nosed mentality, bringing defense to a team, which is something that's Magic team could greatly benefit from.
Oh, yes. They need it.
So,
what about Scott Brooks?
I hadn't even thought, because I have a name in mind, but we'll talk. Scott Brooks is interesting, too. What I've learned to appreciate with Scott Brooks in retrospect now is the non-X's and O's stuff and the chemistry and the dynamics he can build amongst the team and create a cohesion, or at least I think he can create, and the player development that he was pretty committed to in Oklahoma. That would be an interesting fit, you would think. There's two names I continually come back to. I've already talked about one before, and I don't even like it as a fit, but Mike D'Antoni. I think Mike D'Antoni should be in the league. I honestly, if the Nuggets don't retain and his name is slipping, I think it's Melvin Hunt is the name of the interim coach right now. If they don't retain him, I'd love to see D'Antoni in Denver, personally.
I like it.
I'll tell you who I want to see in Orlando. And I have no information. I have no sources. I did tweet this about an hour ago, and all I got was positive responses, so it must be right. Patrick Ewing.
Wow.
Patrick Ewing. It makes sense. He used to play for the Magic. He's been an assistant coach with the Wizards. I can't believe it. It's slipping my mind now. I have to look this up. Please hold during the silence while I check my timeline. He was an assistant or an associate coach with the Wizards, the Rockets, the Magic, and right now the Hornets. He's an associate head coach with the Hornets, right? He has served his time as an assistant. He was an amazing pro. I think he's got all kinds of knowledge. He's a big man mentor. So to teach someone like Vucevic how to play defense, to bring whoever it is that if they keep Tobias Harris, to school him on some big man tendencies down low, not that he's a big man per se, but he's got those tendencies. I think there's so much he can bring to a team. It's amazing.
There is, but is this a big man's game anymore?
So that's an interesting point too, because Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal last year wrote about this, and why don't former big men become head coaches in the league? And the result, there's really no good explanation for it, but you notice that? When former players become coaches, it's not normally a center.
No.
Kevin McHale That's like one of the exceptions. Most of the time, it's a Byron Scott type of guy.
Phil Jackson.
Vinny Del Negro. Yeah, Phil Jackson was like a wing, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was like a stretch four.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Stretch four. But generally, it's not a center
that becomes the head coach. Yeah, you really don't.
But Ewing has, quote-unquote, paid his dues. I don't know any of the background stuff of, like, the inner workings and the networking of who knows who and what bridges may or may not have been burned. All I'm saying is, and I'm a Knicks fan through and through, so I want to see Patrick Ewing. I want to see what he could do.
Yeah.
I think the Magic thing would be very intriguing because of the talent they have. Aaron Gordon. Yes, Aaron Gordon.
Yep.
The guy from U of A, right? Big man that needs some polishing. Vucevic. Big man that's on the cusp of being an all-star that needs some polishing. Tobias Harris could use some polishing. If they draft another big guy. Ah! Yeah. I want Patrick Ewing to be a head coach in this league.
Probably
as badly as I want Mike D'Antoni to be a coach.
Yeah, you're definitely on the D'Antoni.
Yes, I'm on the D'Antoni train, and I'm on the Ewing train, or Island, or whatever it is, and I'm not leaving until one of them gets a job, it feels like. But I don't quite understand why his name doesn't come up more, but...
No, it's a very, very interesting take, and right. I haven't heard of that. So I like it.
He's one of those guys that he's been an assistant coach for like 10 years now.
So he's absolutely, you know, he knows the ins and outs of being a coach.
It's not like he retired last season and then he sat right on the bench. It's like he's been on the bench for quite some time.
And I think when guys look at somebody who is a Hall of Fame player. You have a different
like McHale,
right?
You know what I mean.
It's a different respect, especially when you look at. I think some of it's the teams that those guys played for. You look at McHale, his past, who he played with. And these guys are probably like, okay, he learned from, you know, some of the greatest players to ever play. So of course, this guy's not only phenomenal all star in himself. But he has also learned from some of the absolute top-tier greatest.
You do bring up a very good point, though, of the game has changed, and it doesn't seem to favor traditional back-to-the-basket big men anymore. So does that hamper Ewing because that's the era he came from? So from a relatable player's level, someone like Kevin McHale, it's an easy transition for younger people to be like, oh, he played with Larry Bird.
Mm-hmm.
He's got rings, right? He played with the Celtics. Legendary, right? They look at Patrick Ewing... And they see he played against Jordan with the Knicks teams that rarely got past those Bulls teams. And he played a traditional center role that isn't in vogue anymore in the NBA.
Yep.
Does that hurt him? Maybe.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe not.
It's intriguing, though, yep. I think, at least. I'd love to see
a lot of these big guys now, they don't like to go back to the basket.
And the other thing...
They're face-up guys. Yeah. They're going to out-quick instead of out-finesse and out-work.
And the other thing, we talked about this right before we hit record and Kicking the Door came on, the new coaches, the finals that we're not going to talk about right now, both first-year NBA coaches at least, Kerr brand new, Blatt obviously a decorated past coming from overseas,
mm-hmm.
but brand new to the NBA. This is not a knock against Vinny Del Negro and Scott Skiles and some of those guys, but they've been through several teams at this point. Why? Why wouldn't you try someone completely fresh in that regard?
Mm-hmm.
Another name is Mike Malone.
Mike Malone, yeah.
The guy from the Kings that got, you know, prematurely let go, wrongfully let go, some might even argue. But regardless, I think there's lots of options out there. The Scott Brooks angle is interesting too, but I'll be curious to see how some of this shapes up.
Well, I think Malone and Brooks will be coaching next year. Both of them will be coaching somewhere.
Seems reasonable. Ewing and D'Antoni probably won't, but I'll keep caping for both of them.
But they definitely will.
So when it comes to these coaches...
You know... Yeah.
Yeah, no, what were you going to say?
I said, you know, I think Brooks and Malone will be coaching. I think the Bulls know who they're going to take. And that leaves really... The Nuggets in Orlando, I think.
And New Orleans.
I think New Orleans kind of has a idea of who they're going to be. At least that's what I've gathered so far. But I think Brooks and Malone, they'll be on either Denver or Orlando.
All right, fair enough. So we're talking about Orlando and Denver and these teams. Common theme is they're in the lottery this year.
Yeah.
Lottery balls just dropped the other day. Shall we do a quick little mock draft with the rest of the time
let's
that we have
it,
tonight?
Let's do it.
All right, so let's see what we're in agreement with. Now, before we begin, I should preface that what I've got on my iPad right now are two different sites. Well, it's one site. It's Nylon Calculus. And I'm referencing the work from the great Andrew Johnson. You can find him at Counting Baskets on Twitter. And Lane Vashro, right? And he is at... I'm going to mess up his Twitter handle. It's like JVL Ball. But if you search for Lane Vashro, you'll find him. They've put together some amazing draft models where they look at Euro ball, they look at high school ball, they look at college ball, they look at drafts going back to like 1990, busts, superstars, all kinds of good stuff, relationships to coaches, all this stuff. I have a lot of data in this tiny iPad
yes, you
right
do.
Now, and I'm excited to talk about this. Who do the Minnesota Timberwolves take with the number one pick overall in the 2015 NBA draft?
I think the Timberwolves are going to go with Jahlil Okafor just because.
No, let me quick time out. Let's go with who do you think they'll pick, not who do you think they should pick, right?
I think they're going.
Right.
They're going to pick Okafor.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you think they're going Okafor?
I think he has a just basic. I think because he's better right now.
Okay.
I like Towns. I think Towns is probably going to be the better NBA player. Frankly, I don't think either him or Towns is ever going to be a cornerstone in your championship team.
Okay.
Maybe not now, and probably not for those teams, at least for the Timberwolves. I mean...
So, statistically, the Towns-Okafor argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
Towns rates higher when it comes to expected wins, right?
Right.
Towns is projected slightly, ever so slightly... to be more of a bust. I'm talking like 0.06 versus 0.04, right? Both are projected to not be busts at all, right? And Okafor is projected slightly higher to be a star, but Towns is projected higher to be a stud. So think a star, stud, like a
yep.
progression. So it's like Okafor may have a higher ceiling, but Towns may have a higher floor, if that makes sense.
Now, did any of these guys give you... that X factor.
What would that X factor be?
That X factor is somebody that you're going to say, you're a superstar, win us the game.
That's a good question. I mean, so...
there's center and power forward. I mean, and Towns isn't going to be a power forward that is playing a point forward like
LeBron. No, not at
LeBron.
All. He's going to be more of a forward center, if anything.
You can essentially eliminate them from... being able to take over a game. And not eliminate, but you can... You don't have to get them the ball. And on the defensive end, which both of these guys are rated more for their defense than their offense, you can run them to death. You can shoot from the outside, which doesn't bring it into...
Towns is pretty mobile, though.
He's mobile,
pretty
quick. But, I mean, would you... we'll have to see how he is. I mean, he is mobile. They can both get out and... play, but I'm just saying Towns isn't going to be guarding the best player on the other team, essentially, because those best players on the other team are handling the ball. They're the point forwards, they're the stretch fours, they're the point guards, they're the shooting guards.
I am intrigued. Personally, actually, I don't even know at this point. I'm so torn because There's stereotypes with both of these guys at this point, and I'm not sure which are actually true. I was listening to Sam Vecenie the other day on one of HP's other podcasts over Podium Game, and he brought up an excellent point that with Okafor, there's this knock against his defense. However, Duke was so thin on the front line this year that he was basically told to not play very aggressive defense because if he got in foul trouble, they had no one to back him up. So we might have a skewed perception of his defensive ability.
We may.
Then on the other side of that, Towns could go buck wild on defense because they were 12 deep at every position, it felt like. You
absolutely.
Know what I mean? And he had Willie Cauley-Stein right next to him, so he could be over-aggressive.
So, question, and I'll give you mine after you answer.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you pick?
Who would I pick?
Who would you pick? You were up there. You had to call the name out.
I would pick Towns.
What I would do, I would trade.
If you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, you would trade the number one pick?
Yeah, I bet you get a couple more picks. And I bet you get two, maybe... I bet you get another first rounder. Maybe somebody off a trade. A second round. I bet you could do some damage trading that first round pick.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
In front look, because you need more pieces. Okafor's not going to get any. The Lakers. The Lakers are the only ones that intrigue me here, just because they have a bona fide superstar who, he's a Hall of Famer and he's on his last leg. Literally.
Okay, so then who do the Lakers take at number two? Do they take the other one? Do they take Okafor or Towns?
Honestly, they have to take the person who's going to be mentally strong enough to handle Kobe.
For like a year or two.
For like a year or two.
But they also have Julius Randle. So then this is the other thing. A lot of people argue that when you're picking within the top three or even the top five, you're not looking for fit. You're looking for best available.
Yeah.
And you figure out the rest later. I don't know. I mean, but they have Julius Randle, who looked very promising, got hurt, and should come back stronger and better than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you take at number two then? That's why I wonder. Do you just go with the other big, Okafor or Towns, and then your front line is Randall and one of those guys?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, you're kind of pigeonholing yourself in the, you got Kobe, so you're going to have plenty of shots going up from him. I think you have some other pieces. I think they have to go best available from that number two spot. Towns or Okafor?
So we're basically saying Towns and Okafor go 1-2.
They're 1-2. I mean, maybe they can make a surprise splash, take like a D'Angelo Russell, the shooting guard from Ohio State.
He's interesting. In Lane's model, he has the highest expected win probability.
He's a good player.
He's a very good player.
He's built for the NBA, and he's somebody who's going to get the ball a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if Towns Okafor go 1-2, then who do the Sixers go with at 3?
The Sixers have to go with it. They need somebody who can get that ball into the basket.
So
I think they go D'Angelo Russell.
Do you think so? Yeah. Then there's the Russell-Moutier comparisons, which from everything I've heard and read and watched at this point, it's not really similar to Towns Okafor, but Russell seems like the safer, more consistent pick with a lower ceiling. Moutier seems like he's got absolute phenomenal superstar potential, but it's a bigger gamble.
So did Vesely when the Wizards picked him up.
Come
on, you saw his highlight reel?
The highlight reel. I'm talking about the actual statistics, though.
Yeah, I know.
You cannot make the Vesely comparison.
No, I'm just, I'm always, it's always a gamble on how these guys, international guys, come in and truly play at the guard position. I think the big men typically have more success than
Are we
than
calling
the
him a international guy at this point, though?
Yeah, I mean, because right.
he
his
came,
name's Emmanuel Moudley.
Well, I mean,
plays
he
in China,
but he's an American prospect, basically.
He is.
That spent the year over there. I think the thing with him is it's a bigger risk, but it's a bigger payout. It sounds like
Now he is pro. He's well. I mean, it's international, but it's international professional. You know what I mean? So he's played in that kind of style, those kind of people. So he. He would be more used to it than a D'Angelo Russell, but I don't see Russell really getting. I see him mentally. From what I've seen, is that he's pretty mentally there, so he'd be ready to handle a load like that and shoulder a load. You're talking about the Sixers. You're not expecting. we're drafting you. You better take us to 60 wins next year. Come on, you.
No, but they're building something, and the whole reason they did this was to land that superstar.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is the goal, Moutier, I think, is very interesting. Let me read this to you, because from Lane's model, on a scale from 0 to 1 for star potential, the number one prospect is Moutier at 0.76. In second place is Okafor at 0.53. And they all stay within the 0.5s and trail off. But that gap between those first two is monumental.
Yes,
that's the thing.
Huge.
Like, Moutier is leaps and bounds, got star potential above every other prospect in here. If you're trying to make a splash and a gamble and go for that superstar,
that is huge.
Don't you go towards Moutier at that point then?
I would say so. And they're obviously going to look at a lot more tape and
Yeah, and interview and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's I think that's really intriguing. It's
I like it.
It's,
I
a, think good it's a good problem. It's a good problem to have.
It is.
I just feel like it is a problem though. Like, what do you actually do there? So then, this is interesting because my team, the New York Knicks. At first, I hated the idea that they're the fourth pick. I almost love it at this point because all the issues we just talked about. Out of those four guys, and I'd even throw in some of the foreign prospects, like Porzingis, for example.
Yeah.
And Hezonja, both those guys, which have potential through the roof, so it seems like. But if the Knicks actually picked one of them, I think there'll be a rebellion at the draft in terms of Knicks fans are notorious for lashing out at whoever they pick.
Yeah.
I remember that they famously destroyed Nene when they drafted him. But regardless. If you look at it, and it's not a four-player draft, but if you look at it as Moutier, Russell, Towns, and Okafor, well, who's ever left out of those four is who they can pick. Because any of those four fit that team, right?
Yeah.
So there's not a bad option there.
No.
However, my personal favorite, as much as I want them to get a point guard, and I do want them to get a point guard.
You want Cauley-Stein, don't you?
How did you know?
I knew it, yeah.
I want Willie Cauley-Stein. I want to draft him and sign him to a 12-year contract that day because he's a younger, higher-ceiling Tyson Chandler, I think, which is an enormous compliment. Defensive player of the year, championship-winning defensive anchor, compliment. Tyson Chandler. Did you see that play at Notre Dame when he ran full court with Grant the whole way? Like, I think he is fascinating to me.
He's
so,
a big boy.
You brought up trading down for the Timberwolves before. I don't see why the... If that was a real possibility and you want to develop a defensive anchor to have on your team for years and years to come, trade down.
Absolutely.
Get a couple picks and pick him at like 7 or 8 maybe, where he'll still be around.
I'm a big fan in the NBA of trading. Unless there is LeBron James coming out, to trading down. Build your team with more pieces. I mean, build your team with more pieces.
The Knicks... You have holes in every position.
I think the NBA is, you know, one of those monsters where you don't know how a lot of these kids will mature. Like you said, it's ceiling. Ceiling is all prediction. Predictions can be very wrong.
And speaking of predictions, obviously we haven't actually nailed down a single pick yet. We'll tighten this
we'll
up.
We'll tighten it up a little closer. Bit.
But let's do one more. So number 5 then. What do the Magic do at 5?
Well, you know, I think that's going to depend on their coach.
If they have a coach by then, also.
Yeah, well, that's true. If they have a coach by then. That number 5 pick, I mean, you got some really good small... You got, well, not really good, but you got some good small forward choices.
We haven't even talked about Justice Winslow.
No, I love Justice Winslow. I think he's a good player.
Stanley Johnson, even.
Yeah? No, I my personal choice, I would go probably after Justice Winslow. I think he fits well with Orlando. He's... He's got an NBA body. He's ready to go.
Bit of an odd fit, though. Like, too small to play 4, maybe a little too slow to play 3.
Yeah.
Kind of in a no man's land a little bit, it seems like. But
I'd go with Porzingis.
Yeah.
It could be intriguing.
I think absolutely. He seems deadly. I mean, he seems absolutely knocked down.
His defense is a little... suspect thing coming in, but I think that's kind of the knock we get on a lot.
They do need a wing regardless. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with Tobias Harris. I think they should probably try to avoid someone like Cauley-Stein because they've got Vucevic in there, and if they had him and Cauley-Stein at the same time, the spacing will be just clogged down low. But a wing would seemingly be the best thing they could do. So I think one of the Euro guys or Winslow, if he's still around at that point, would probably be great for him.
I mean, Stanley Johnson from Arizona could possibly be. I mean, he's a 6'7 tweener. They got to get somebody who can shoot the 3-ball a little bit from that. Or not the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody can stretch it out. It didn't even have to be 3-point, but hit that, you know, 20-footer consistently.
They're building a nice core. I mean, if you look at if they've got Vucevic and Gordon as their front line, they really do need a 3 because then they've got Oladipo and Peyton in the backcourt.
Yep.
The Tobias Harris thing, maybe they let him walk and get someone to fill that role.
You got Stanley Johnson, 6'7", 6'7". Winslow's 6'6". Yeah, you got some people there.
Winslow might be, if Winslow's still around, that might be a perfect fit for them.
Yeah.
So the way I see this at this point, we figured out the Rockets, we figured out the Hawks, we figured out all the coaching roles, and we figured out the top five picks.
I like it.
It seems like kind of like we've achieved a lot for one.
We
night.
Have.
I'd say we're good.
Yep.
By the way, I never said this in the beginning. This is episode 6 of the Long Two
I know,
podcast.
Right?
All 7 of our listeners, they might not have known what they were listening to
this
whole time.
This is crazy.
It's a good thing they probably went to nyloncalculus.com or iTunes to the Hardwood Paroxysm channel, or they went to SoundCloud to listen to this. Regardless, I'm Matt Deanna. What is your name?
I am Steve Harney.
I'm on Twitter. You can find me at @hoop_nerd. You can find Steve at
almostgotahandle.com.
He's so close. I'm determined to get this man a Twitter account by the beginning of next season. But regardless, this has been episode 6 of the Long Two. We encourage your questions and feedback, and we'll see you next week again before the finals. Or you'll hear from us, I should say, because you
Absolutely.
Haven't seen us yet. But Steve, I'd say this was job well done.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everyone, for listening in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have
a good one.